everyone.
Hi.
Hi. Hard to get us quieted down now that it's summertime, I guess. My name's Mary Mullen. I'm Vice President of Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, and I welcome all of you here. Some of you come most, if not all, of the time. Some of you come whenever you're in town. There's a visitor here from Germany today and from some other places, too, I think. And some of you are just, this is your first time. We'd like to meet you at the end of the service. Today's service is the last service in the lay ministry on working. And Pat Watkins is in charge of the service today, and she's going to have a lot of musical help, and we're going to have a good time. Then afterward, don't run completely away, because there's a work Sunday, and you'll hear a little bit more about it. See, that's why I'm dressed like I am, representing work. So, Pat.
Okay. Well, we're going to, I guess I'll light the candle first, and then we'll have one little musical piece on a tape. Do we have matches?
Do we have smokes and long prayers or anything?
I think something else is busy. Is there a candle?
Yeah.
There's one.
There's
a candle.
Well, since this is the last session in the working program, we will light the candle this morning for all of us who work in the world. For all the workers and those who would like to work. Now, this is going to be, I hope, a fun Sunday. We're going to have some music by our music makers in Prairie, lots of readings by people in the audience, and I've given out some passages to read. And I need one woman and one man to volunteer to read something that Al is going to be doing too. You didn't get one, okay. So if you would share the sheet with Al, it's a piece from Death of a Salesman, and you can read with him. You do Linda. Now I need one man, very short, not very much to say.
I'm very short.
Do you think that you could come up with Al Nettleton and read that cold when... Okay. So we're going to start off here with a little piece of cowboy music. I think. I could not resist. I have a wonderful folk music collection that I never get to hear because all my tape recorders and all that stuff is broken. Has been for ages. This recording was made about 30 years ago.
Spied a cowpuncher riding along. His hat was thrown back and his spurs was jingling. And as he approached me, he was singing this song.
Now you can clap or sway or whatever while this is. Well, that's a rhythm. Pretend you're riding a horse. Get along, little doggies.
You know that Wyoming
will be a new home.
You know that Wyoming will
Now, the reason, if you wonder why we're playing a cowboy piece, it's because, not because it's a cowboy piece, because it happens to be a work song. And it also happens to be one of the types of music that romanticize work. The reason I asked you to clap and to move is because this was the kind of song that the cowboys did sing when they were going out on the range. This kind of music happened to make, try, is one of the things that made this one of the great American myths, the idea that this was such a wonderful romantic life on the wild ranges of Wyoming leading these cattle drives. In actuality, it was probably a lot of very hard, brutal work that was not romantic at all. So some of us, we do tend to romanticize work. The fact of the matter is that for most people, work is not a very pleasant affair at all. Who has the passage from the jungle? Not yours, Eileen, but the other one. You want to read that? This is another case where work is being romanticized.
A piece of McClure in the jungle. They stood there while the sun went down upon this scene, and the sky in the west turned blood red. The tops of the houses shone like fire. Jurgis and Una were not thinking of the sunset, however. Their backs were turned to it, and all their thoughts were a packing town, which they could see so plainly in the distance. The line of buildings stood clear-cut and black against the sky. Here and there, out of the mass, rose the great chimneys, with the river of smoke streaming away to the end of the world. It was a study in colors now, this smoke. In the sunset light, it was black and brown and gray and purple. All the sordid suggestions of the place were gone. In the twilight, it was a vision of power. To the two who stood watching while the darkness swallowed it up, it seemed a dream of wonder, with its tale of human energy, of employment for thousands upon thousands, of opportunity and freedom, of life and love and joy. When they came away arm in arm, Jurgis was saying, "Tomorrow I shall go there and get a job."
Okay, now, if you remember Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, this young couple that Linda is reading about here come over from Lithuania and have just an absolutely horrible time in Chicago in the stockyards. And this little passage comes from the beginning of the book where they have actually been overwhelmed with the smells and the scents and the sounds of the packing house. And in a few moments, they go away a little distance from the stockyard environment, and they look on this as some glorious, wonderful experience that they're going to have, and they're going to go out there and get a job and become wealthy Americans and so forth. But the story, as you know, is very different from that. As I say, I think some of us here in this room are probably extremely lucky. Most of us perhaps enjoy our work. That's certainly not true for the majority of people. Mary is kind of smiling. Maybe a few. I complain all the time. But I guess if you think about some of the experiences that other people have in connection with work, it's not really thought of as a pleasant experience. It's something most people endure. If you would read the passage about the final things, we have an expression here of someone in a job situation, employment situation, in which they are sort of entrapped, but there's an element of free will at work.
Cat's out and get me this morning. She played a song from Wyoming, and then she came to Mr. This was given to me by a friend, Margaret Stedman, who some of you may know. Her granddaughter, Kelsey, worked in RE for a while as well. I think there's a reason why Margaret gave this to me. And I gave it to Pat, now Pat's getting even. It's from the private journal of Donald A. Meeper called Final Things. Today a man was terminated from his job. Now, this was a cantankerous individual who really didn't like his assigned task, and who simply tinkered along with them to the extent that his desires would allow. And thus, he didn't have a high rating in what we call performance. In fact, he had a rather low rating.
And this so wounded both his heart and his pride that he began to see a conspiracy in which all persons of higher position had presumably set themselves to punishing him because they feared the truths that he spoke. In actuality, he felt that he should be allowed to do whatever he pleased at his job and not be instructed by others. He refused to change jobs. He would not go to another place where the activities were more to his liking. Instead, he insisted that the world should transplant those activities into his present employment, which, of course, the world did not do. And so he did not perform well, and he was angered when faced with others' appraisals of his work, and he struck out at those who held up the mirror for him to see. Just why he would not adapt to the world by moving is his concern. Perhaps he could not risk getting what he really wanted and bearing the responsibility for how things turned out thereafter. Perhaps it was easier to fight an impossible battle so that he would never feel the awful internal challenge that occurs when one is given opportunity and one must thereafter make a success of it or lose pride. It is easier to ignore the open gate while casting epithets at the jailer. To be sure, the bosses are jailers, no doubt about it. Thus, one is secure in complaining about the evil nature of the bosses. To acknowledge that the gate is open, that one can simply leave the jailers with their empty jail and go forth to survive on one's own. This takes courage. But the mission of this place is to break rocks into gravel. And therefore, this place looks like a jail unless you want to swing a hammer and carve a stone and call yourself a sculptor.
So there's two ways of looking at what is a bad work situation. You can leave, change things, or you can change the way you perceive them. In Sinclair's The Jungle, going back to that once more, he certainly did not see any free will at work. It's one of the great works in determinism in American literature. You're completely trapped and there's nothing that you can do about it. In this marvelous passage that Eileen is going to read, he is talking about hogs, but he's talking about more than hogs. This is a section of the book in which they have gone into the stockyards and seen all of the operations that take place there before the young man gets his job in the stockyards. And you want to go ahead, Eileen? This is what he's thinking after he has seen the hogs being slaughtered.
One cannot stand and watch very long without becoming philosophical, without beginning to deal in symbols and similes, and to hear the hog squeal of the universe. Was it permitted to believe that there was nowhere upon the earth or above the earth a heaven for hogs, where they were requited for all this suffering? Each of these hogs was a separate creature. Some were white hogs, some were black, some were brown, some were spotted, some were old, some were young, some were long and lean, some were monstrous. And each of them had an individuality of his own, a will of his own, a hope and a heart's desire. Each was full of self-confidence, of self-importance and a sense of dignity. And trusting and strong in faith, he had gone about his business the while a black shadow hung over him and a horrid fate waited in his pathway. Now suddenly it had swooped upon him and had seized him by the leg. Relentless, remorseless it was. All his protests, his screams were nothing to it. It did its cruel will with him, as if his wishes, his feelings, had simply no existence at all. It cut his throat and watched him gasp out his life. And now was one to believe that there was nowhere a God hog to whom this hog personality was precious, to whom these hog squeals and agonies had a meaning, who would take this hog into his arms to comfort him, reward him for his work well done, and show him the meaning of the sacrifice? Perhaps some glimpse of all this was in the thoughts of our humble-minded dervish as he turned to go on with the rest of the party and muttered, "Jesus, but I'm glad I'm not a hog."
Well, of course, the whole point of the book is that he is a hog. And that's exactly how he's treated. And I guess when I read that, that's when my job suddenly doesn't seem quite as awful as I thought it was. And I don't think that any of us here are going through this kind of agony on our jobs. But still, these are different ways in which work has been perceived as either bad or unhappy or an entrapment. Who has the good day's work?
This is a good day's work by Naomi Raplansky. Whose dog am I? A time clock dog. Whose dog are you? Learn how to smile at foreman, a dirty joke, and time for a smoke. Be slick, be quick, be human. The night is small and hard to hold, sinks into the spongy morning. The day is large and hard to pass, and I can't go over it, and can't go under it, and can't go around it, but must go through it. And me, dog tired.
I think that's a little closer, maybe, to what some of us feel. Sir Briggs and Lawrence et al. Are going to do a musical number for us on some of the unhappy aspects of work, right? The Song of the Weavers.
Oh, change of mind about it. Never unhappy with it.
I will sit down and enjoy this.
How many are you expecting right
now? You said you were doing three.
We got more.
Right now, you're doing one.
One right now? We do you two?
You do it just one unhappy aspect of work.
Unhappy one. Well, what a...
I hate big words.
Yeah, he's got the last word. Which one we're going to do? We do
large.
No, which one?
Happy song comes later.
Happy song comes later.
When you do work.
This is our
personal
rehearsal.
Yes.
This is really something about not working. That comes later in the program.
We're
going
to sing it.
Well, we're out of
faith. Come on, brother tradesmen, let's travel alone. Pray, come and tell me where the trade is all gone. Long time I have traveled and cannot find none. And it's all the hard times of old England, in old England, very hard times. Provisions you buy at the shop, it is true, but if you've no money, there's none there for you. So what's a poor man and his family to do? And it's all the hard times of old England, in old England, very hard times. If you go to a shop and you ask for a job, they will answer you there with a shake and a nod. So that's enough to make a man turn out and rob. And it's all the hard times of old England, in old England, very hard times. You will see the poor tradesmen walking the street from morning till night for employment to seek, and scarcely they've got any shoes to their feet. And it's all the hard times of old England, in old England, very hard times. Our soldiers and sailors have just come from war, been fighting for the Queen and the country to shore. Come home to be starved, better stay where they were. And it's all the hard times of old England, in old England, very hard times. And now to conclude and to finish my song, let us hope that these hard times, they will not last long. I hope soon to have occasion to alter my song and sing, oh, the good times of old England, in old England, jolly good times.
Play music, Sam.
No, you need it. I don't need it.
Worked in a cotton mill all my life. I've got nothing but a barlow knife and a
tar gun. Cotton mill girls, hard times everywhere.
Hard times, cotton mill girls, hard times, cotton mill girls, hard times, cotton mill girls, hard times everywhere.
Who left their script lying here?
Me, probably.
Okay. Another one of the bad parts of work, aspects of work, is one that. Elizabeth is going to mention right now.
Well, I don't know whether I would really characterize it. I ran across this in Barbara Wood's biography of her father, E.F. Schumacher. And it's just very brief. The Buddhist point of view takes the functions of work to be at least threefold. To give a man a chance to utilize and develop his faculties. To enable him to overcome his egocentricness by joining with other people in a common task. And to bring forth the goods and services needed for a becoming existence. The West concentrated on the third of these functions and has become trapped in materialism.
Yes, okay. That's one of the not so pleasant aspects. Last summer, all of you, most of you missed out on this wonderful opportunity when the Prairie Play Readers had one of their theater parties, and we went to see a play called Division Street by Steve Tessick at the University Theater. And we have Mike Briggs and who else is going to, Rachel Siegfried, are going to do a little short scene from that illustrating this question of materialism. And I might just mention to start, before they begin, that one of the things that, first of all, Nancy Hartag in from Prairie played the role that Rachel is going to read in that production. But this is the story of a young man who grew up during the Vietnam era, sort of in a hippie milieu. Who was not at all concerned or interested in any of these materialistic things of life. And suddenly, as he reaches his late 20s or so, decides that he's going to change his way of living. And so we'll leave it here with Mike will start off.
I want a job. I want to work. You're really upsetting me talking in that way of yours. Sick and tired of it all, Diana. I have ODs on all those causes and issues. I don't care about the folk people, Diana.
Ah!
I don't want to hear about another boat person again. I don't care about nuclear waste. To hell with it. I don't care about oil spills, third world dictators, wilderness preserves, or bilingual education. Sugar and kid cereal? I don't care. I don't give a good goddamn about the ozone layer, the whales, the porpoises, the cute little baby seals. I don't know who's running Cambodia, and I don't care. I don't even care if the Beatles ever get back together again. Anything that I've ever cared about, anything you've ever cared about, anything that anyone has ever cared about, I don't care about, and I don't care that I don't care. No, you don't! If you understood, you wouldn't say I understand like that! Don't you understand? I am tired of drinking black coffee out of earthen mugs you made yourself. I want a cup, I want a saucer, and I want sugar in it. I don't care if I never see another mimeo machine or another cruddy leaflet again. Me. All I care about. Me! Me, me. Wonderful, yummy, delicious. Me! I want a nice condominium without a stitch of macrame in it. I want a TV, a stereo, toaster oven, shag rugs, designer towels. A big fridge. A huge fridge. A walk-in fridge. When do I want it? I want it now! Diane, I'm starting a new life.
I didn't think that would go over very well. That's wonderful, wonderful. Okay. So there are a lot of people these days who are starting to feel this way about jobs. Okay, now, going on to a third attitude about work, we have the problem of those people who are out of work. And this is, we were supposed to have a little song about it. But we will do a little scene here, again with some of our Prairie Play readers, from Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. And although the idea of employment is not a central theme in Miller's work, it does come up on several occasions. And this is one of the scenes referring to what happens to Willie Loman when he does not have a job. Yeah. Who's Willie Loman here? Al?
I'm Biff.
You're Willie. Biff. Willie is not here. In this scene. This is the two sons and the mother.
All right, you found where you are.
Yeah, there's
okay.
All
right. This is Cole.
Okay. He's got no character. Charlie wouldn't do this, not in his own house, spewing out that vomit from his mind.
Charlie never had to cope with what he's got to.
People are worse off than Willie Loman. Believe me, I've seen them.
Then make Charlie your father, Biff. You can't do that, can you? I don't say he's a great man. Willie Loman never made a lot of money. His name was never in the paper. He's not the finest character that ever lived. But he's a human being, and a terrible thing is happening to him. So attention must be paid. He's not to be allowed to fall into his grave like an old dog. Attention. Attention must be finally paid to such a person. You call him crazy.
I didn't mean.
No, a lot of people think he's lost his balance. But you don't have to be very smart to know what his trouble is. The man is exhausted.
Sure.
A small man can be just as exhausted as a great man. He works for a company 36 years this March. Opens up unheard of territories to their trademark. And now in his old age, they take his salary away.
I didn't know that, Mom.
You never asked, my dear. Now that you get your spending money someplace else, you don't trouble your mind with him.
But I gave you money last...
Christmas time, $50. To fix the hot water, it cost $97.50. For 5 weeks, he's been on straight commission, like a beginner, an unknown.
Those ungrateful bastards.
Are they any worse than his sons? When he brought them business, when he was young, they were glad to see him. But now, his old friends, the old buyers that loved him so and always found some order to hand him in a pinch, they're all dead, retired. He used to be able to make 6-7 calls a day in Boston. Now he takes his valises out of the car, puts them back and takes them out again, and he's exhausted. Instead of walking, he talks now. He drives 700 miles, and when he gets there, no one knows him anymore. No one welcomes him. And what goes through a man's mind driving 700 miles home without having earned a cent? Why shouldn't he talk to himself? Why? When he has to go to Charlie and borrow $50 a week and pretend to me that it's his pay? How long can that go on? How long? You see, I'm sitting here... No, you see what I'm sitting here and waiting for. And you tell me he has no character? The man who never worked a day but for your benefit? When does he get the medal for that?
Thank you. Aren't they great? I put in a plug here for the Prairie Play Readers. We meet once a month. You should all come out. It's lots of fun.
We want a service.
Huh?
We want a whole service.
You want a whole service? I don't know whether you could deal with this for a whole service. Did you want to do a song on out of... did you have another song on being out of work, or that was...
Hallelujah, I'm alone.
Or we can wait. You're going to do something a few minutes from now, and you can just do it from then. Okay, let's look for a brief moment at woman's place in the job market, if there is such a thing. And I'm, you know, despite what we all think here, I think in the real world there is. Who has the waitress?
Waitresses by Rannis Crosby. I think they gave us uniforms so we remember who we are. That's what I think. Our faces are one gigantic grin. I don't think they even notice when we show our teeth and raise our hackles. We are always smiling and nodding and pleasing. As for me, my uniform feels like skin. I'd like to just read a little bit of the preface, and that is that this is what she wrote about it. Waitresses grew out of an increasing awareness of the base on which the waitress system rests, both sexual and economic. Shortly after I wrote the poem, I turned in my uniform.
An interesting aside on this, when I was going through some of this material, I was really tempted to change waitress to waiter, because I thought what was said in the poem applied to waiter also. So it's supposed to be a feminist poem, but I really think it applies to both sexes. So. We have another occupation that women are much engaged in, and you may think that this is Irma Bombeck, but it's not. Here's a mother and a housewife who looks upon her job with great humor, but with lots of truth. Norma? If you feel that's too much for one person to read, let Barbara give you that one paragraph.
It seems to be part of the journal because it begins by saying,
yes.
Tuesday. Only Tuesday, and already I feel consumed by nursery school schedules, car calls, and playgroup activities. Leaning against my dark brown GE side-by-side refrigerator freezer, I stare at the scraps of peanut butter crusts turning slimy in the sun. It is only 3:00. It is too early for vodka. Or is it? By whose schedule must I wait the extra 2 hours that would make it civilized, acceptable, commonplace? By whose sacred proclamation must I wait for the magic cocktail time to begin, when all the other mothers on the block reach for the potion that dulls the memory of their days? I'm an individual, I think. I am. I will have my vodka at 3 o'clock. I reach. I pour. It sparkles there among the crests. As it slides down my throat, I am my own person, engaging in ritual by choice. My son sleeps on no iron crib sheets. There is a mess on his pants. I will clean it up when he awakens. I will put it to soak in the toilet, and I will shake it up and down in the toilet. And my husband will complain that all the toilets in the house have died. There is a terrible noise upstairs. The terrible noise continues. Odin is coming downstairs. It is John, I think, in panic. My mind slowly begins to move in the direction of the noise, to focus on the noise. It is John, and he is falling down the stairs. I move from the kitchen to the stairs in a terrible silence. As I reach the stairs, John is screaming. John's head is covered with blood. This is serious, I think. This isn't like the time he almost bit off his tongue, or even the time he broke his foot jumping off Sally's dresser. Sally said he could fly. No, this is a mess, and the mess is slowly seeping into the Persian rug. There is a hole in his head. I see if I spunk it off. Yes, a definite hole in the middle of his forehead. And the car is in the garage today, having its muffler fixed. I phone the doctor, who says, "Bring him in right away." Inn is on the other side of town. John is riding on my lap and waving the ice cube on his hole. He throws it across the kitchen. I phone the yellow, but they say it will be 15 or 20 minutes. That means a half an hour. I phone the hippie cab, and they say, "Wow, we're splitting right now. Stay cool." We go and sit on the curb, trying to stay cool. The blood just won't stop. I rummage around in my purse to see if I have an extra Kleenex and discover I have locked myself out of the house. Also notice I have no shoes on. Then they're here, rounding the corner on two wheels. The cab has a dragon painted on one side and "Power to the People" on the other. The driver is very stoned and very concerned. It only takes him 7 minutes to get through. He takes the long way, but turns the meter off and goes through all the stop signs. I'm so grateful, I write out a check for the People's Park Defense Fund and drop it in the little basket they have hanging in the back seat of that purse. Bloody buckets. Back home, stitched up and looking like a miniature lobotomized Frankenstein, John is banging on the table for some money. "What kind of yogurt do you want, John?" "What kind do we have?" "We have strawberry, blueberry, boysenberry, mandarin orange, spiced apple, red raspberry, cherry." There is a course. I know just what it portends. "I'll have daffodil yogurt."
Now we will hear once again from those wonderful musicians. Do you have a name for your little group? Oh, Norma doesn't want to say what it is.
I would want to do a side job.
You want to do what?
A song about
moonlighting.
Moonlighting.
Yes.
What happened to the policeman?
That's
so you're going to play this?
That's a ukulele. Banjo pretending to be a ukulele. Chorus on this one. Goes.
"If only right and proper, a conscientious copper should sometimes put his uniform aside A most rewarding hobby, beneficial to a hobby, is to do a bit of burgling on the side.
Do it again.
It's only right and proper for a conscientious lover should somehow move his uniform aside. A most relaxing hobby, beneficial to a body, is to do a bit of burgling on the side. After flying round the beat all day for 8 hours on or more, arresting thieves and crooks of every kind, I need a change from acting as the long arm of the law. Some pastime will help a man unwind. Although the hobby can be rather taxing, the benefits just cannot be denied. I find it therapeutic and relaxing to do a bit of burgling on the side. It's only right and proper, a conscientious copper should sometimes put his uniform aside. A most relaxing hobby, beneficial to a body, is to do a bit of burgling on the side. And I'll hang my helmet on the hanger in the hall and change it to a striped shirt and flat hat. With burgling bag and jimmy, I slip out across the wall in search of swag as cautious as a cat. Burglaring demands both health and fitness, and as a burglar I can say with pride, constabulary colleagues never witness my little bit of burgling on the side. It's only right and proper, a conscientious copper should sometimes put his uniform aside. A most relaxing hobby, beneficial to a body, is to do a bit of burgling on the side. Burgling boosts me wages and I'm better off today, for all my casual earnings are tax-free. And though it may be true that on the whole crime doesn't pay, it pays more than the government pays me. It takes a thief to catch a thief who's thieving, and so I feel my hobby's justified. On my feet all the burglars are leaving, since I took up my burgling on the side. It's only right and proper, a conscientious copper should sometimes put his uniform aside. A most reluctant body, beneficial to a body, is to do a thing of burgling on the side.
Yeah, we have.
I like to rise when the sun she rises early in the morning. I like to hear the small birds singing merrily among the meadow. And to rob for the life of a country boy, and to ramble in the new mown hay. In spring we sow, and the harvest mow, and that is how the seasons round they go. But of all the times, if choose I may, 'twould be rambling through the new mown hay. For I watch the rise when the sun she rises early in the morning. I like to hear them small birds singing merrily upon their meadow, and to rock for the life of a country boy, and to ramble in the new mown hay. In autumn when the leaves they turn, we gather all the wood that's fit to burn. We cut, we stack, we stow away, and go rambling in the new mown hay. I like to rise in the sun, she rises early in the morning. I like to hear the small birds singing merrily along their labor. And hurrah for the life of a country boy, and to revel in the newborn hay. In winter when the skies are gray, we hedge and ditch our time away. But in the summer when the sun shines gay, we go rambling through the new mown hay. Oh, I like to rise when the sun she rises early in the morning. I like to hear them small birds singing merrily upon their labor. And hurrah for the life of a country boy, and to ramble in the new mown hay.
Birds, I like small birds, I like birds of every size. I like to take my two big fingers and stick them in the little bird's eyes.
I hate to rise when the sun she rises early in the morning. I hate to hear them small birds singing merrily along their way. And the fox and the wife of the country boy, I'm a penalty to the new mown hay.
Well,
having
talked about the bad things of work and romanticizing, now we get into the wonderful things of work. And who has the poem by Marge, To Be of Use? Did I not give that to anyone? Well, that gives me a chance to read something. I think the worst thing of all is to be out of work. And this poem has to do with the blessings of work and the good of work. The people I love the best jump into work head first, without dallying in the shallows, and swim off with sure strokes almost out of sight. They seem to become natives of that element, the black sleek heads of seals bouncing like half-submerged balls. I love people who harness themselves, an ox to a heavy cart, who pull like water buffalo with massive patience, who strain in the mud and the muck to move things forward, who do what has to be done again and again. I want to be with people who submerge in the task, who go into the fields to harvest and work in a row and pass the bags along, who stand in line and haul in their places, who are not parlor generals and field deserters, but who move in a common rhythm when the food must come in or the fire be put out. And that is the end of my program and my lay ministry. If Mary plans to pass the basket, I have a couple of very lovely work songs on the tape recorder I'd like to play while we're doing that, if I may. Shall I do that before or after announcements, or would you like to do the announcements first? Let's do
it now. We'll do it now.
Okay, if you want to just sit and listen quietly to a couple of songs on work. I would like very much to thank Al Nettleton, who recorded these for me, and all of my readers.
Why weave we bread and Yankee leather?
One more song. I'd like to ask the visitors to introduce themselves, but I can't put by saying that today is our work day and ask Rachel to announce that first, since it's so appropriate to the theme of today's service.
Well, this afternoon after lunch, I suppose it'd be 1 o'clock or so, we're having cleanup and work. Jobs that need doing are we need to clean storage areas, kitchen, clean the chairs, shampoo the carpets, clean the coat room, painting. We have painting downstairs, and we like to paint the office here in the back stairwell. And there's some outside painting that needs to be touched up on the north side. Outside, we have work weeding the beds, mowing lawn, trimming shrubs, planting some annuals, and raking. And let's see, what else? Anything else we can think of? Anyway, I'll pass this around, and if you haven't signed up already and want to help this afternoon, it would be greatly appreciated.
And you don't have to sign up to help either.
I have another announcement, too, that
sure.
I can hold off
on. Let's hold off on it. Did you have a question about that?
Yeah, I was going to ask Rachel, what time are we convening for work after lunch?
1 o'clock.
Okay, and for those of you who don't know it, often people from Prairie go over to the Pizza Hut just on the frontage road. And if any of you brought a picnic and want to eat here, fine. But please come back at 1.
Mary, one other thing. If someone would rather not work this afternoon but come back later and just put chairs and everything back in place, that would be a kind of job that would be greatly appreciated.
I'll do that.
Okay, I'd like to ask visitors to introduce themselves, and if they want to tell, well, where they're from and how they happen to get here or anything else, feel free.
Pam and Frank Potter from the Dubuque Scholarship, and Frank is the president.
But we do meet, we just had our, received our charter about a year and a half ago, and we meet September through May, and we'll meet every Sunday, and we meet at the Masonic Temple right downtown, so 10:30 every Sunday, so we'll be there for your town.
Other visitors? We have another member and visitor, Rosemarie Lester, and why don't you make your announcement while you're up?
Oh. I don't really consider myself a visitor anymore. Once a week, my God, I wish I was thinking once a year. I live in Frankfurt, West Germany, and I have been trying to get a job back here with the university, and this is the work problem. I know what it means not to be able to get the work you very much want. And so I have been dreaming of getting back into the university system as a teacher and then spending my summer in Germany. Which is what a lot of my colleagues do. It's possible. And now I have realized after getting my umpteenth rejection just a week ago, I've decided enough, and I'm going to keep working in Frankfurt until I'm 65 and retire here. I'll be home here every summer. And while I have a chance to make an announcement, I have spoken to several of my friends here. And are you aware that there is a Unitarian Universalist Peace Network based in Philadelphia? I'm actively involved with the U.S. American Peace Network in Europe. We are the quote-unquote opposition to U.S. Americans over there. And we're quite active and we're cooperating with German, West German peace movement. And about 6 months ago, I was at a conference in Holland, a conference of the IARF, International Association of Religious Freedom, something like that. And it was a pleasant but rather boring conference. the only light or the important point there was a fellow named Steve Schick, who is based in Philadelphia, who is Unitarian Universalist and who works full-time with a new organization, Unitarian Universalist Peace Network. And it would be too long to go into detail now, but for instance, this is their sticker here, which I think is kind of nice, saying your piece. But this is really a very well-organized organization of our own church, which provides for an information packet, which part of which I have here to give to the Social Action Committee or whoever can work on it, which provides for various propaganda mechanisms. In other words, radio spots, they are recorded radio messages, or leaflets or posters, in other words, to get to do more to raise people's awareness from a Unitarian Universalist point of view. I think the material is very good, and whoever is interested, I brought it along to give it and hope that somebody will pick up on that.
Okay, so see Rosemarie afterward.
Yeah, okay.
We have a whole summer of services and programs and activities planned, Frederica.
Next week, 15th, we are invited to Sauk City, as we have been in the past. That's at 11 o'clock?
12:30.
No, the potluck's at 12:30.
That's it. That's all there is.
We have a program after the potluck.
Okay. There won't be a service here at Prairie. On June 22nd, Lee Bullen from Prairie is going to do a service on the history of printing. We'll also be starting our first potluck breakfast on that Sunday morning. The next Sunday is June 29th, and we've tentatively agreed to go to the Crane Foundation near Baraboo. That is something we would need to pay for, and if we come as a group, we need to agree to give them $60, which comes to $3 for an adult and $1.50 per person, and then they will give us an hour and a half tour, and afterwards we can picnic. But we will need to get at least sense that 20 people would come to that about. There'll be a potluck picnic then right on the grounds afterwards. Yeah, you know right now, we just have a show of hands. Sunday, June 29th, that's 2 weeks from now. 3 weeks from now, excuse me.
I think we can get 20.
Yes. Two more today?
Yeah, one more kid.
Like this.
Who's been?
We've been.
What about walking? How much walking would there be?
Usually they do a short presentation for everybody, and then there's some walking around the pens.
Sure.
Well, yeah, you just wouldn't see all the cranes.
No, you can see the cranes, I think.
Well, you could see some, but you wouldn't see them all if you didn't walk.
No.
Mary said that they had every crane except one in the world, every type of crane there. And it certainly looks like there are enough people to go.
Yeah.
Then in July, our focus is going to be on peace, and it's going to start out by the Gates of Heaven Synagogue service at 11 o'clock on July 6th, and that will be a peace service. Some of us were there last year. It would be nice to have a few more people from Prairie. It was a really incredible experience last year, I think. And that's at 11 o'clock at the Gates of Heaven Synagogue. All this will be in the Prairie Fire. There will be a program committee meeting a week from this Tuesday, June 17th, from 5 to 7 at my house, and it will be a potluck.
Okay, there's a question is, what do people, do they bring the money to the Crane Foundation or do they give money to someone else now?
Well, I think, we haven't decided that. I'm going to be out of town.
Just bring it.
But I think from the show of hands, we'll definitely get $60. So I think I'll call them and just say that we will meet at 10:30 at the Crane Foundation.
Someone will be in charge there.
Right. How about a ride for matching?
Okay, you have a ride. Okay, announcements are kind of dragging on here. Let's go a little bit faster if we can. Are there some other visitors here who would just like to say hello and tell us their name?
Yes. Hey, Speller Lamar. She also graduated from high school recently in the arts.
Other visitors?
Yes. I'm Linda Messley. Long time since I've been in Prairie, but a couple weeks ago I went camping and canoeing on Sugar River, and I had so much fun with Karen Jackson.
Any other visitors?
Someone's being very shy back there. I really would like to welcome Shirley Shusky.
Yes.
It's so nice. Well, I'm sure there are lots of new people here who perhaps don't know that you're one of our staunch Prairie members who moved to Texas, and we haven't seen you for a while.
It's good to be back. I'm here for the summer.
Great.
Okay, we have a couple other Prairie announcements. Mary Beth O'Halloran is resigning as RE director and moving to Iowa to be with her mother, I believe. And the RE committee is beginning a search for a new RE director. Please call Barbara Golden if you're interested. Barbara? There's Barbara. For information and an application form. And I believe Mary Beth is resigning as of the end of June or July. Somewhere in the middle of the summer. Does someone want to make this announcement of Barbara, do you, about need for RE volunteers this summer? Or should I just read this? Okay. We need volunteers for downstairs this summer. Sign up for these dates, June 22nd, July 13th and 20th, and all through August. One parent with two of our student helpers. So that's what we need, is one parent, I guess, or one person, one adult. Then another announcement, Family Enhancement, which sponsors Parents Places, is having a fundraising garage sale July 13, 14 on Friday and Saturday at Barbara Golden's house. And call Barb to donate goods or sell your own. You have an announcement.
A few weeks ago at the Growth Workshop, there was some interest expressed in having an additional Vespers service here at Prairie. If you're interested,
and would like to contribute in some way to developing that that opportunity, come to my house this Wednesday, the 11th, 7:30. It's at the Countryside Apartments on the Beltline, Frontage Road. If you don't know how to get there, call me. I'm in the book.
Yeah. Madison Symphony Chorus has Summer Sings, which will begin on the week. Is that right?
Yes.
And I have to remind back there on the board under events, they have 6 nights of singing with various conductors. They provide the music, and you can come and run through a work once. It's a really nice way without committing yourself to anything. You can come to one or all, and you can look back there and see what the works we're going to sing. The conductors will be having our downtown and
Lee Bullen.
First, a prairie announcement. This isn't Prairie Fire deadline. It's next Sunday. But because we're going to be in Sauk City, I hope anybody that has announcements will have them written out and plan to bring them Sunday. My partner is in the East for an indefinite time, staying, helping with our grandchildren. So I'm going to have to do it all by myself. On Sunday, then on Tuesday. The other announcement is that there will be 3 Soviet visitors here this week, and there's going to be a friendship dinner for them on Tuesday evening. That's on
Wednesday.
I'm sorry. Wednesday evening. And one of the visitors is Vladimir Posner, who is a journalist. He's represented a Soviet newspaper in Washington for a number of years. He's, I understand, quite good at speaking English. Yes. He should be interested. He knows both Soviet society and American society. I'm sure he'll have some good comments about them. There's going to be a social hour beginning at 6:30, dinner at 7:30. This will be at the Heritage House on East Washington. The price is $15 per person. I think about $7 of this is for the meal, and the rest will be as much as needed to help house and feed the visitors while they're here. And I've heard a proposal from the chairman of the Madison Society for American-Soviet Friendship, who is sponsoring the dinner, that he's going to propose that whatever is left from the expenses of this visit will go to help the situation in Chernobyl. And I've printed 600 tickets for this. They asked me for 400, and then they came back the other day and wanted 200 more. So apparently people are buying tickets. If anybody would like to have some, I have a few.
Okay, do we have a couple more announcements? Quickly, please, quickly.
Briefly, this Friday evening we're going to help Hazel Kelly Farrell celebrate her birthday. I don't know which one it is. It's from 5 till 8, and everyone's invited. If you want to bring food and drink, that would be welcome. But don't bring in gifts. She has requested no gifts.
Where is that?
Here? Here. Oh, in Prairie. Yeah, here. So everyone's welcome.
When is the time and date?
5 till 8 here this Friday.
Pat.
Thank you.
I have two.
I have one announcement. The Long Range Planning Committee, which is supposed to meet 2 Tuesdays, is not a Tuesday, but a weekly Tuesday. And Rachel Seeping will at 7 o'clock.
Okay, Pat.
I have 2 short announcements. Number one, I have a petition here for Rebecca Young's nomination to the 76th Assembly District. I need 10 signatures from people who live in the district, and I just knew you folks at Prairie would sign up, so I brought that with me. And then I have the tickets for people who ordered tickets for the theater party for Saturday night.
and I'd like to say a word about that. We are going on Saturday evening to the Civic Center to see Beyond Therapy by Christopher Durang. The tickets are $5, and I've told Prairie people that if you can't get to the Civic Center, I'll be glad to buy the tickets for you. We have 10 people signed up so far, and then we'll be going out for coffee or drinks or whatever after the show. So if you're interested, see me about that.
Add one sentence to a previous announcement. I simply want to add one sentence. At the occasion of the Soviet visitors, the cocktail hour at the dinner, the ethnic connection is going to present a very good program.
I think, why don't you give it real quick, Ben, and then we'll close it up.
In case you can't go to the dinner, and hear the letter of Fosner was very, very good. You might like to tune in to WHA on Tuesday from at 9 o'clock or at work at noon until the talk. It will be just a good break.
And live on WIBA Wednesday night.
I'll add one last thing. As you know, we're getting more and more members, and one of them I'd like to welcome with his official own name tag tonight, today, Randy Hill. Randy. I'll come back to work.
Come back.